is Eric Sinrod and
Jonathan Armstrong. I'm here from the UK.
And we're partners with Duane Morris, and we're once again back at you with our weekly Tech Law 10, presenting a hot topic where the law and information technology intersect. Jonathan, you want to tell us what the issue is this week?
Well, you've been talking quite a bit about jury trials and the social media and technology aspects of the jury trials. What's on your mind there?
Well, you know, jurors are routinely, at least in our country, admonished by judges only to consider the evidence presented to them at trial and not to consider outside information. We have the rules of evidence for a reason. They're designed to bring factual information to the attention of jurors that's considered reliable. But in this electronic age now, it's so easy for jurors just, you know, reflexively to do a Google search or otherwise to find out about the incident at issue in a case or about the parties, and that can be problematical. This wasn't such an issue historically because it was much more inconvenient. If jurors were considering, for example, an accident, you know, likely they wouldn't go to all the trouble to, you know, travel and physically visit where the accident happened. But as I mentioned, now just the, you know, the click of a mouse, jurors can find out all sorts of information, and some of it can be unreliable, and it could ultimately influence a decision in a case, which could be a problem. This is not to say that, you know, jurors are malevolent or, you know, have some sort of bad motive, but in our society now, in this modern electronic age, it's just almost instinct now to just go online and find out more. But what I said was true, and this could present, you know, unreliable information in a case that could be considered, and the parties, the lawyers, and the judges don't even know about it. So then we need to think about solutions. You know, how do we grapple with this problem? Perhaps before getting to that, Jonathan, maybe you can tell us about some developments over there across the pond. I understand there's something going on with, you know, SMS messages going back and forth between jurors and potential guidance coming down from your Lord Chief Justice.
Yes, there is. That's right. I was fortunate enough to serve on a jury when I was a law student, and I then did a thesis on how the juries work in the UK. So that used to be a bit of a passion of mine. But I think one thing for certain is we should never underestimate the willingness of many people on the jury to do good and to do the right thing. And I think in many cases, the type of issues that you're describing, Eric, actually come from that, really. It's people who genuinely want to get the conviction or acquittal right. I was on one jury, and even however many years it is later, obviously under our legislation, I'm still prohibited from giving exact details, but it was a fascinating case for me, the way it worked, in that the jury actually, believe it or not, tried to convict the prosecution's star witness instead of the defendant. And it was one of those strange moments where, as a law student, you know they can't do it, but you sort of don't want to influence the jury too much by saying you're a law student, and it was tricky. And I think the case that we've had here recently stems from the same, you know, great motives. What happened is, here in the UK, we empanel the whole jury together for the fortnight that the court will need. So if, let's say, there's going to be 10 trials, then we'll put 150 jurors in a waiting area, and we'll herd maybe 15 at a time in for the 12 that we need on the jury. And what happened here is, two people who didn't know each other had sat around in the waiting room for a couple of days together. They're called to sit on separate trials, and as they're separating, one of them sees the defendant in the other juror's trial and sends her an SMS once they've sat down to say, I know the guy you're about to trial, to try. He's a thief. He's bound to have done it. So we've already had issues around social media use of technology in court. I'm sure there have been other cases that the judges have never found out about. But all of this has come to light this week with the WikiLeaks bail application over here in the UK, and we've had a couple of things for the founder of WikiLeaks to get bail and then an appeal that the UK prosecutors lodged on behalf of the Swedish government. And for the first time, we think One of the court reporters from the Times asked permission to do live Twitter reporting from the courtroom. The court granted his request on the proviso that he do it quietly and the judge not be able to hear his thumbs ticking on his iPhone or BlackBerry. And the Lord Chief Justice has decided this coming week to try and make some policy statement on the use of social media in court. And I think that's likely to distinguish jury trials from non-jury trials. The tradition we normally have is judges can't be influenced, juries can. And I guess that's the same for you, is it? The judge is allowed to research, but the jury aren't. Would that be right, Eric?
Well, I'm not sure that's so correct either. Plainly, you know, the jurors are confined to considering, you know, factual, true, reliable evidence, and the judge is to make, you know, decisions of law and to give, you know, instructions to the jury in terms of how they're supposed to apply the law to the facts. What we're really thinking about now is, you know, how do we get jurors to, you know, essentially do the right thing, only consider the evidence presented to them. You know, plainly, just the historical general admonition, you know, don't consider anything out of court, isn't really getting the job done. You know, surveys show that jurors really do electronically conduct research, perhaps motivated by good intentions. You know, there's been thought here that maybe jurors should be warned that they will get sanctioned monetarily and punished if they stray. But it seems to me that the more, you know, that's a little bit heavy-handed for people that are essentially, you know, giving up their own time for their civic duty, and probably a better idea. And obviously, younger jurors are, you know, used to being told what they should and shouldn't do, and they still do their own thing online anyway. They don't really necessarily listen to authority figures. If a parent says, don't use Facebook in a certain way, a kid might be used to doing it anyway. But education seems to be the most important thing, where judges will tell jurors why the rules of evidence are in place, exactly what conduct they should not engage in terms of, you know, research outside of court, having a more active conversation with jurors, doing what we have called voir dire, where you actually question potential jurors to see whether they can sit as jurors in the case. Usually there's a large panel brought in, and you select jurors out of the large panel and have them debate in their own words what they think they can and can't do in terms of research, and then have them reiterate back to the court their proper understanding once they've been educated. And then lastly, you know, jurors, once they are impaneled in a case, should know and be informed that they can ask questions of the judge along the way in a case. So if they're confused and not sure what they should do, they can get guidance at any point, not just on the front end of the case. What are your thoughts about that, Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if one of the interesting things for those who aren't familiar with our comparative legal systems is we generally speaking don't have civil jury trials anymore. It's criminal only, with some very rare exceptions, you know, things like treason and defamation and probably murdering one of the Queen's swans. You know, these obscure offences, generally, you get jury trial civil penalties. But other than that, it's normally serious crimes. But over there, I guess a lot of your juries, most of your juries, maybe, are on civil trials, are they?
Yes, I mean, the vast majority of cases are civil, and many of them are two juries. I had a two-month jury trial recently, and we had a large panel of approximately 100 prospective jurors in the courtroom, from which we needed to select 12 ultimately to serve as jurors. And it was astounding, you know, how many, you know, we started the voir dire, interviewing the prospective jurors on day one. By day two, it was astounding how many, you know, openly admitted that night in between, they did research on the companies involved in the case and the parties and the issues as they already understood them. Which automatically disqualified a number of people. Now, maybe some of them didn't want to serve as jurors, and that was a ground to get them out. But I think most of them were just curious and didn't understand that what they did was improper. Yes.
I do find that incredible. I mean, my thesis at university was about a particularly repressive measure where we withdrew the right to question jurors, except in very qualified circumstances, so neither the defendant nor the prosecution really can question jurors or challenge them anymore, which I don't think, you know, all of the evidence suggests was a bad move, but we did it. Whereas, but then I suspect when we look at things like O.J. Simpson a while back and Michael Jackson trial from here, against that context, we find it hard to understand how long it takes you to get a jury. I mean, why can't you just rope in the first 12 people or the first 9 people you find in the street there?
Well, picking a jury in the United States is now a cottage industry. There are jury consultants, and there's all sorts of psychology applied, and what demographics do you want, and that's a whole other conversation, but it's very complicated, and picking a jury in a case, can, especially in large cases, can take a very long time, and the lawyers and the judges are involved. But be that as may, we've now gone over our 10-minute limit, so we're going to close it down. We look forward to hearing from you in terms of potential topics we should speak on in the future. My email address is ejsinrod, S-I-N-R-O-D, at DwayneMorris.com. Jonathan?
I'm J.P. Armstrong at DwayneMorris.com. We're on Twitter. You're on Facebook. We're on LinkedIn. I guess the other thing we want to do, Eric, and maybe we won't sing it, but we want to wish everyone happy holidays as well. This is likely the last Tech Law 10 of 2010. We've really enjoyed having your company here in our first experimental few months. We hope to hear more from you in 2011, and we just wish you peace, health, and happiness over the festive season.
Very well said. We'll be back at you in 2011. Thank you.
Bye now.